The Patriots play the Jets tonight, Thursday night football. Are we officially getting bad Thursday night football?
Doesn't it go back to the last several seasons with Thursday nights? And the matchups we get on Thursday nights?
With Al Michaels complaining about
right.
them?
It's
yes.
It's going to be a great defensive game.
Will it? Don't fist pump. That means you bet on it.
No, I didn't.
I don't believe you.
No, I really didn't. Okay. I'm working it, but I really didn't bet on it.
Okay. Danny, the Thursday night football schedule is actually decent this year.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. There's only like two or three duds the whole season.
Yeah. Now, granted, this one could be a complete dud. We'll see. Are the Patriots actually like one of the worst teams in the NFL? They do have a win on the season, which right. is better than the Panthers. But like,
they're a bottom five team, but I don't okay. know if they're down there with the Panthers.
Right, like that, because before the season, we had lots of people on the show that were like, Patriots might have the worst right. roster in the entire league.
They were the leader for the last team to win a game, and then they won their opener.
Like, we've had that a lot. Even Ben Brown came on the show after the Patriots won a game and was like, I still think they're one of the
awful.
Worst rosters in the league. So I'm just curious, like, do we see that tonight? Do they just get absolutely obliterated by the Jets? Because the Jets, on the flip side, have been called the most talented roster in the NFL.
Is it weird that I just want to watch it just for Aaron Rodgers?
Just to see what he looks like?
Yeah.
We've seen him.
I just want to see what he looks like each week to week.
We've seen him twice. I didn't think he was that good in week one. I didn't watch their week two game super close, but he didn't look like he did anything crazy awesome or crazy
right.
terrible. So yeah, like I
just want to watch him.
It's one of the biggest questions of the entire season. In theory, the Jets have a roster good enough to win the Super Bowl if they have good quarterback play.
Right.
Not they don't need like great top two in the league type quarterback play, just good. Is Rodgers that? And he might be. He might even be better than that. Or he could be, what, 41 years old coming off an Achilles
right.
injury and
look like it.
Right. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't work. We've seen Kirk Cousins look like that
right.
doesn't work for half of the season. So I don't know. But yes, I do want to see pretty much every time. How good is Aaron Rodgers and how good is that Jets
yeah.
team?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, again, great question.
Shohei Ohtani stole his 49th base yesterday. He got a single on the first pitch of the game. He stole second on the second pitch of the game. He ended up getting thrown out between third and home in the inning, though, Ed. What's he doing? What a bum over here.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just waiting for 50-50. I don't care if he gets thrown out. They won the game. I'm waiting for 50-50. I still... 10 games left. You say he's going to get the steals easy.
We know he's one more steal.
Yeah. I don't know. Is he going to press in the homers? I don't know. Two homers in 10 games.
You know what the sad part is? This is like the most pressure-filled games Ohtani's ever played in Major
League
Baseball.
Oh, there's no question. Well, by now, they're 30 games out each of his years.
Yeah. Like him trying to get 50-50 is the most pressure he's ever felt
yes.
in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely.
Now, he's going to play in the playoffs in 3 weeks, so
yes.
will change, but yeah, him put like the idea of him pushing or like reaching
yes.
or something, he's never had to do that before because
no.
the Angels have never played a big game with him, and now all of a sudden he's like, I gotta hit my 50th home run. So yeah, he's on 48-49 because he didn't homer yesterday because he's a bum. He's gonna get there.
I'm gonna predict he's there by Monday.
Oh really? You think he's 50-50 by Monday?
Yes.
Wow. I'll take it.
Who do they? Is it Colorado this weekend or Colorado next week?
I think they end with Colorado, don't they?
Oh, that's the final series of the or of the
yeah.
year for the Dodgers.
I think they might be Colorado. They're Miami today again.
Yeah.
By the way, you guys, you done with San Diego?
Yeah, they're done with the Padres. Sorry about that. They can't hit Dylan Cease. This guy out here almost throwing a perfect
back
game.
To back to back.
Yeah,
calm
down. Calm
was that
down.
Yesterday, though?
Yeah, that was yesterday. The Astros put out one of
their Rockies
guys.
This weekend at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Danny
they're in L.A.
Right. Oh, they're in L.A. I thought
yeah.
it was in Coors.
No, Coors is the last series.
Oh, they play the Rockies
season.
Twice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he's going to be 60-60.
It's Rockies, Padres, Rockies to end the season.
Oh, he's going 60-60, Ed. What do we do? Well, he won't get 60 stolen bases because he gets a home run every time he plays the Rockies.
No.
He can't steal a base. Unbelievable. Rockies twice?
Yeah.
What, did they butter up this schedule for the Dodgers to end
oh,
it?
Oh, come on.
The
come
Rockies
on.
Twice?
We played three, everybody like everyone else.
Three of the last four series, Miami, Colorado,
oh,
San Diego, Colorado.
My, just hand the division to the Dodgers on a platter.
No, we still got to play those tough Padres.
No, you could lose all three and you'll win the division because you're going to win every other game because it's the Rockies. Unbelievable.
Next question.
Jordan Love returned to practice yesterday. He got hurt in week one, MCL injury. He missed week two. Packers still beat the Titans, or excuse me, beat Indianapolis while running the ball 53 times. They play the Titans this weekend. Jordan Love was limited in practice, was not a full participant. Love gave a quote about taking things day to day and sort of just see where he is every day. He initially had a 3 to 6 week timeline.
He's got
a
pretty strong MCL.
Yeah. Like, what's...
Yeah.
What's going on here? Did he actually hurt his MCL or not?
I don't know. I don't know if he actually sprained it, because this is, for an MCL, usually 3 to 6 weeks, this is a fast turnaround.
Yeah.
He is the franchise quarterback. He needs to not mess around with this.
I saw this is going to be one of the greatest things I've ever sourced on this show, a TikTok by who I believe is a doctor, who his entire TikTok page is just going through NFL player injuries.
And talking about what they mean.
Right. And there's just like models of bones and muscles to like point to what he's talking about. And he's like, based on this information, I think Cooper Kupp's injury is this, right? Joe Mixon, he didn't have a high ankle sprain. He had a low ankle sprain based on what they
said.
That's
what this means.
So that means he's likely going to play this weekend or maybe miss one weekend. Ken Walker, he's got an oblique. He'd be shocked if Ken Walker missed more than this week. It's that type of stuff. And the one on Jordan Love, he was like, based on this, it was just inflammation. Like, there was no actual damage to the MCL. There was just inflammation around it. And as soon as that goes away, he's fine.
He can play.
So if this random guy on TikTok is right, then Jordan Love's fine. And he can probably play this weekend against the Titans, which...
All right.
Well, if he's limited in practice, he's out of practice, this TikTok guy might be a genius.
Right? So the one disappointment, and I don't know if it's really a disappointment because they ran the ball 53 times, but it would have been funny if Malik Willis beat the Titans after they traded him away for a 7th-round pick. Like, again, they ran the ball 53 times against Indy, so it really wouldn't have been Malik Willis doing the winning, but it would be funny if Malik Willis outplayed Will Levis and beat the Titans.
I just want to know when this doctor has real time to treat his patients.
Well,
he's always on TikTok discussing injuries.
I have no idea if he's a real doctor. The TikToks just look nice because he says words that sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and there's cool graphics next to him. So it's a very good presentation. Could be fooling all of us, but he also might be right about a lot of this.
What was the question again? I'm sorry, I just got off the floor.
Buffalo Wild Wings in Los Angeles are offering free wings after UCLA football wins. So after every UCLA win, Buffalo Wild Wings in LA will give out 6 free wings with a purchase of $10 or more.
This is what you can do when you've actually watched them play.
They lost to Indiana 42-13.
Yeah, they're not good. They beat Hawaii by 3.
Right, and they came back to win that game. They had to kick 2 field goals in the 4th quarter and come back and beat them. Brett McMurphy tweeted out that UCLA is an underdog in 9 of their last 10.
Not a lot of wings are going to be handed out.
Right. Which, by the way, Buffalo Wild Wings. Come on. If you're going to do free wings, actually do free wings. Don't give me this $10 minimum purchase.
Right.
Give away the free wings.
Right.
I should be able to walk in and get 6 wings and walk out. Give you no money whatsoever.
It should be like the first time I went to Red Robin with Adam Hill, the bottomless fries.
Still had to pay for those, though.
You had to pay for a meal to get them.
Yeah.
Yes, you did have to pay for a meal to get them.
Listen, UCLA wins. I want to be able to walk in, UCLA shirt on, and it can limit it to 6, but I'm giving you no money, and you're giving me 6 wings, and I'm walking out.
Something tells me they're not going to have to worry, at least for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, it's rough, yeah.
They're at LSU, home to Oregon, and then at Penn State.
Yeah. Buffalo Wild Wings is saving its wings.
Safe for a month.
Okay.
Silence.
Tennessee is raising ticket prices to pay players. 10% increase on tickets. Tennessee is calling it a talent fee that they're going to use to pay players.
Well, if you want your team to win, you'll pay a little more on the tickets.
Here's my question. College sports, big time college sports, charge basically the same prices as professional sporting events.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just parking, as expensive everything to go to those games. Why can professional teams pay their players and college teams are like, oh, we got to pay the players, we better raise our ticket prices from the already high number that they are?
Why can pro teams pay their players? Because they're billionaire owners?
No, the billionaire owners aren't paying out of pocket. They're profitable.
They are profitable. But
why does Tennessee have to raise ticket prices? They're already charging the same as professional.
They missed out on a quarterback who wanted the Arch Manning money, and they didn't have enough, so they got to raise ticket prices.
But I'm saying Arch Manning makes as much money as a normal NFL quarterback. How come NFL teams can pay their players these giant payrolls, but college teams are like, oh, we charge the same amount for everything, but we don't have the money to do it? What's going on there?
Because colleges have to pay double the players.
No, they don't. You don't have to pay them all. You don't have to pay your backup left guard. Nobody's forcing that on you.
It'd be nice.
It would be nice, but you don't have to.
That's where the 10% goes. It goes to all the backups who don't get money right now.
Maybe, but exactly. They don't get the money right now. Where's all this money going? Where are they spending it all? Stop building these practice facilities with slides in them. What are we doing? Stop raising ticket prices because you can't allocate your money properly.
Those are great. That's another great question.
Also wanted to put this out here. Craig Kimbrell got designated for assignment yesterday by the Orioles.
I can't believe it took this long.
So Kimbrell has a 5.33 ERA with the Orioles. In his last 11 appearances, his ERA is 13.94.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Oh, like I said, I can't believe it took this long.
They signed him this offseason for $12
million.
Like, he was one of the big signing relievers.
He was in Philly last year.
Yeah. And he was actually good in the first half of the season. And second half, the guy is he's just can't get anybody out. It's just been disaster every time he takes the mound.
Every time he came in for the Dodgers, I was blinking, saying, oh, no, here he comes.
You do that with every reliever, though.
Not as much with Kimbrell. I didn't like him. Then he went to the Phillies, and I forget how he did with the Phillies last year.
All right, he's a reliever, so everybody probably thinks he was terrible. I gotta look at how bad was he with the Dodgers?
He probably had a 3-something ERA.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't like him.
3.75 ERA with the Dodgers.
I didn't like him.
He was an above-average reliever with the Dodgers at a 3.75 ERA. Meanwhile, with Baltimore, he's at 5.33 on the year. To be fair, 3.75 is actually one of the worst seasons of his career. He's generally been lights out.
I didn't come to the level of throwing things this time at the TV. But I wasn't his biggest fan. Then he went to Philly.
Yep, 3.26 with Philly, so a little bit better
with Philadelphia.
Yeah, and now a 5.33 with the Orioles.
I mean, you could have him at this point, Ed.
Yeah, I'd start him at this point.
Yeah, he would be a starter. Is he stretched out to go at least four?
Exactly.
Coming up next, we'll get into some Golden Knights because training camp is here and Robin Lehner is not. Ed, one of our favorite stories. Is back. Robin Lehner.
He's not back.
Story's back.
That's the story.
Lehner is not back. So this is according to Frank Saravalli. The Golden Knights are reviewing their options up to and including contract termination after goaltender Robin Lehner failed to attend training camp for a mandatory preseason medical exam required to confirm his ineligibility to play, multiple sources told Daily Faceoff. Lehner hasn't played since the 2021-2022 season. He had hip and shoulder surgeries after that season. He is in the final year of his contract. He is owed $4.5 million this season from the Golden Knights. According to Frank Saravalli, the Golden Knights have been in touch with the NHL and who's then been in touch with the NHLPA about terminating Lehner's contract. The benefit for the Golden Knights would be they would not have to use long-term IR to start the season. If Lehner's contract counts against them, they're going to have to start the year using long-term IR. If not, then they'll still be right up against the salary cap. They're not going to have a bunch of space. They'll have a little bit, but they won't have to use long-term IR unless somebody gets hurt in season, and they can then use long-term IR and trade for somebody, which they've done for multiple years in a row. Also, Bill Foley won't have to pay $4.5 million to Robin Lehner.
Right.
But I don't even know if Foley cares about that because Foley seems to not care about paying the players because long-term IR it, baby, let's go. How much money can we spend on players? Here's my first question for you. Did Robin Lehner show up last year?
I don't believe he did.
Right, like that would have been a storyline if Lehner had
walked in
just
to get his medical.
Right. Like, and again, I have no idea, can't confirm this. Kelly McCrimmon talks today to the media. We'll see. I'm sure he's going to be asked about this. We'll see if he says anything about that. But I was under the impression Leonard hasn't showed up to anything for like 2 years. And so if he didn't show up last year for training camp slash this medical to prove he couldn't play, why didn't they get it terminated last year? Like, why did they just not think about it? And they were like, oh, we should probably try to get out of that now. But I just don't remember him showing up last year.
That they didn't consider it the first time he didn't show up.
Maybe last year, I think they were going to use long-term IR even if Leonard's contract didn't count, so they didn't care as much because they were already using long-term IR, and at that point it doesn't matter. But that was my first thought, was like, this isn't a brand new situation. This is the exact same situation that they were in last year with Robin Leonard and having to pay him despite him not being able to play.
Right.
And I don't remember, because I feel pretty confident if Robin Leonard, if we had known that he had showed up to training camp slash this medical, I would have talked about it on the show nonstop. I'd have been like, that's your goalie. There's your number one goalie. He's here. But he didn't show up, and now the Golden Knights are trying to terminate this.
Boy, with his money problems, I don't know why he didn't show up. He would have gotten $4.5 million.
Right? So did he really miss out on $4.5 million by just not showing up?
If the NHL allows him to void the contract, yeah.
Like, that's kind of insane.
Get on a plane, man.
Right?
Get on a plane. Come, take your physical. You'll fail it.
Right.
Likely. And then you go on LTIR.
That's the part that's weird to me. Is he actually going to lose this? Lose the final year of this contract?
Because he didn't show up.
Right. Like, that's kind of crazy. And I will give him one benefit of the doubt. Maybe he thought it'd be like last year where he didn't show up and they were just, all right, yeah, whatever. We're going to pay this off here. But there is a chance that Robin Leonard could have just showed up to training camp, taken this medical, and gone
failed
home.
It and gone home.
And I don't know that the Golden Knights would have had any sort of recourse. There's also a chance maybe the Golden Knights are trying to get out of this no matter what.
Right.
Like, they might have tried to find another, even if he did show up, tried to find another reason. I don't know what that reason would have been, but they might just be searching for, hey, how do we get out of this? This guy hasn't been here for 2 years.
Right.
How do we get out of this type situation? But yeah, I don't know what happened last year, why they changed, is how they were approaching this year.
And I don't know 100% that he didn't show up last year.
Right. We don't know that for sure.
So I don't know. He might have rolled in one day.
Up.
Yeah. And taken the physical and failed it and then been out of there and not wanted to deal with the media or whoever would have wanted to talk to him.
Yeah.
And he would have just come in and gone out.
Yeah. And the way things are run in most sports, if you're injured, you usually don't talk to the media anyway.
Right.
So
he
could have easily done that without anybody knowing or talking to anybody whatsoever. But yeah, there's a chance his contract is, I guess, completely wiped out. I don't know what the precedent is in the NHL for. We know the precedent. There's been players are injured and their career is effectively over while they still have multiple years left on their contract. And we've seen those players get traded, basically their contract get traded just to go to different teams who have cap space or are using long-term IR type stuff. But I don't know if there's been a precedent before for team wants to terminate the contract claiming the player didn't show up for their medical to start the year.
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah. And the other thing is there any chance he's healthy? It's been 2 years.
I mean, he's had so many other problems. I don't know if he's.
Yeah, the snakes are out there somewhere.
Snakes are out there.
Mark
the
Stone's backyard.
The bankruptcy's out there. The money problems are out there. Doesn't preclude him from getting healthy from his surgeries.
I mean, all of that, in my mind, would say I need to try to go play.
That's what I'm saying. Why would you forfeit $4.5 million with all that money problems you have?
Yeah, like I would be like, I need to get healthy and try to play this year because maybe I can sign another contract the following year.
Now, maybe his representatives are telling him they can't do this and you're going to get paid.
Yeah, that you just that don't you worry about it. They can't get out of it.
They can't get out of this contract.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how official the preseason medical is. Like, if Robin Leonard saw a doctor in June and the doctor was like, you can't play hockey for another 8 months or whatever, can he say, I don't need to show up to your stupid medical. I've got a doctor right here that told me in June that I can't
play
hockey.
That I can't play.
So why would I show up to your dumb medical when I've already been told I can't play? So, I don't know how all of that works. Logically, that would make sense to me if a doctor told me in June.
Well, especially if you have his results and he can send the results to the Golden Knights.
If I have a doctor that says you can't play, I don't need your dumb team doctor to tell me. Like, whatever, I got it. And that's fine. So I don't know. Don't know how that works. Don't know how the NHL will rule. the NHLPA, I'm assuming, is going to fight for Robin Leonard's to not his contract terminated, because you don't, as a players association, you don't want even...
You don't want any kind of
even the most like wild stories, no. You don't want guys losing
You don't want
their
precedent of guys losing their contract.
Yeah, so I'm guessing there'd be quite a significant fight from the players association if this happens. But also, if Robin Leonard is just no contact, nobody's heard from him, doesn't show up to training camp, doesn't do anything, then I feel like the Golden Knights probably do have some sort of argument for... Why are we paying this guy? He's like, we haven't heard from him in a year, 2 years, whatever it's been. What are we doing? We can't agree to keep paying this guy.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. I'll be curious what Kelly McCrimmon has to say about it today.
Well, he'll be asked about it.
Do you think he'll?
I don't know. I was asked this last night by someone how much he'll talk on this.
Because sometimes he does talk a decent amount about things. So I don't know if he'll... Because, to me, this is a situation where he could do one of two things.
He could say that it's a personal thing between him and the player, or between the team and the player, and they don't comment on contracts.
It. Or it could be something where he's like, here's exactly what happened. On June 3rd, we had this conversation. On July 18th, we talked to this... He's done that before, where he goes into, timelines and just goes for, 10 minutes. So... I wonder if this is a situation where he talks or he just sort of shuts things down and says, we're not going to talk
about Robin Leonard.
Because there's no... They're not at any point expecting him to play. So there's no downside for Kelly McCrimmon to throw Robin Leonard under the bus, to say. Right?
You're not expecting him to come back.
You're not upsetting a player that's going to help your team win games this year if you say something that offends Robin Leonard. So...
No.
It's not a case where it's like, oh, you can't say that about your current player, because I don't think they even view him really as a current player. They have no plans. They've already replaced him in two different years with goalies. So, interesting story, and I will always be happy when Robin Leonard's name gets brought up, because...
Oh, he always has good. He always makes for good content.
Yeah. When do we get the Robin Leonard interview? Because he's been a player who's had no problem talking in the past about his own issues, the way he's been treated, had no problem. And it's been 2 years and there's been nothing publicly from him.
Have not heard one word from him.
Yeah. And the last...
But he's had some things on his mind.
The last thing, playing-wise, the last thing was, if you remember, he needed the hip and shoulder surgery, and the Golden Knights were in such a salary cap problem, they couldn't call up another goalie, and he had to sit on the bench as the backup while needing surgery. Right, that's the last thing that happened as a true member of the Golden Knights as a player, and we haven't really heard anything since then from him. So I wonder what his side of this last two years has been.
I'll tell you what: if they try to take his money away from him, we probably will hear from him.
Yeah, we might. We might hear from Robin Leonard pretty soon. All right, coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we're gonna get back into college football with Brett McMurphy.
It has been terrible. It's been awful. NIL, the way it was intended. That if a student athlete had a value to their name, image, or likeness, and there was a business product or service that wanted to use a student athlete to market their business product or service, well, they could receive compensation, valid compensation to do that. But in college athletics, we are our own worst enemy, and we find the loophole to every single rule in the rule book. And we found a loophole where we created these things called collectives. But the amounts of money that we're getting paid were simply ridiculous and still are ridiculous, and they just continue to be ridiculous.
Follow the guys on Twitter at Ed Graney and at @Bischoff_Tyler.
Joining us now from Action Network, it's Brett McMurphy. Good morning, Brett. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brett.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. We have not really been able to answer this question for the last 2 weeks or so, but do you have a reason as to why the Pac-12 doesn't seem to really want UNLV?
No, I don't. That surprised me. When they added the schools that they added, obviously if you wanted UNLV, you would have thought they would have added them with that group. I know there's, and you guys are a lot closer to this than me, there's, I guess, differing opinions on whether UNLV and Nevada is a package deal. If it is, nothing against Nevada, but this is the reality. The Pac-12 doesn't want Nevada as part of it. But I've also seen reports where that's not accurate. So I really don't know. I don't have a good answer because I would have put them on my first four to get in. But certainly, you know, they're going to go back to the drawing board and they'll either look at UNLV. You know, UTSA is a possibility. You know, you've seen the Tulane, Memphis, even South Florida, which I live in Tampa. That makes no sense to me. But, you know, they've got to figure this out. So, yeah, I'm not much help. I don't have an answer for it either, but I was stunned that UNLV was not on it. I do know that UNLV from, you know, people I've talked to throughout the college athletics industry, if you will, you know, UNLV may be hoping for, you know, a better spot, you know, like a Big 12 or something like that. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't think that would be any time that would happen any time in the next year or so, but, you know, maybe that could be part of the reasoning for the Pac-12, you know, not giving them an invite also.
With the Pac-12 and the six they currently have, what makes sense to you? Is Memphis Tulane the next best two options for them? Like, what do you think they should be trying to do to at least get to eight?
You know, I don't think it matters, to be honest, because, you know, look, most of the moves in the past with conference realignment was based on TV revenue or TV market size and how much value a school would bring to that conference. So whether the Pac-12 adds Tulane, Memphis, USF, or they add UNLV, UTSA, Memphis, or mix and match those schools any way you want, the value of the TV deal is not going to change. It's going to be the same. And you can argue that, well, some of those teams, you know, USF's in a Tampa market. Tampa's a top 12 market in the country. Well, yeah, it is, but they don't draw a top 12 audience because, you know, it's the fifth best sports option in the city. So, you know, you could say, well, Tulane's in New Orleans. That's got a bigger market. I understand all that, but, you know, honestly, I don't think it matters. I think what you want to do, if I'm the Pac-12, what I want to do is you want to get the strongest football programs into your conference. And how you determine what that is, whether it's historical, whether it's recent, whether it's future projections, you know, whatever analytics you want to throw out there, that's who I want. Because bottom line is, if you make the college football playoff, you're going to make more money. And if you don't, you're not. So it's not going to matter if you're in these big markets. If you're not making the college football playoff, you're going to be making chunk change for your media rights deal, and you're not going to get any added bonus for college football playoff appearances.
I want to ask you about some specific teams. I know you've written about them and saw your tweets about them. Is Nebraska back?
Ask me when we're at their bowl game. I mean, it's been you know, it's the longest streak in, you know, among the power conferences not going to a bowl game. So it's gone on 7 years now. But I think, you know, are they back? No, they're not. You know, this is at Tom Osborne. They're not, you know, playing for national titles. But I think Matt Rule's, you know, turned it around. You know, I talked to him at Big Ten Media Days. He felt like, you know, this was similar to kind of the, you know, rebuilding processes he did at Temple and Baylor. And, you know, he turned those programs around in a couple of years. And it looks like he's doing the same thing at Nebraska. He actually felt like he was in a better position compared with those other schools. And last year, Nebraska really wasn't that bad. It's just they turned the ball over just at a ridiculous amount of, like, literally almost every play, they're committing a turnover, something like minus 21 turnover margin, some just insane number. So that basically that's what Matt said in the offseason. So if we can just hold on to the ball and not, you know, if we don't get a first down, punt it, but don't throw an interception, don't fumble. You know, they lost four games by a score of 13 to 10. Like, how can you even do that? Like, you can't even try to do that. But they've got a stud quarterback. the schedule's really manageable. It sets up nice for them. They got a, you know, big game Friday against Illinois. The Illini coming off an upset of a ranked Kansas team, which obviously UNLV took care of that Kansas team also. But yeah, I mean, back there, they'll be back in the bowl games. I don't think they're back on the national stage yet, but you know, baby steps. It's a welcome sight for Husker fans. And even though they've had these struggles the last 7 years, Saturday, this blows my mind. Their 400th consecutive home sellout. That is unmatched in any sport.
I wanted to ask you about Florida, assuming that they are going to need a new head coach. How good of a job do you think that is? Like, is Florida still good enough that, hey, they could poach another good Power 5 coach, or are they going to have to hire an assistant or a group of five coach to sort of give them a shot as opposed to poaching a really good, a proven coach?
No, I think, well, first, the first part of your question, assuming they get rid of their coach, they're getting rid of their coach. So we'll skip that part. No, I think, you know, they hired Napier. You know, he was an up-and-comer, you know, had done well in the Sun Belt. But, no, they've got to go after an established power conference coach. The influential boosters at Florida are in love with Lane Kiffin. And they would love to get Lane Kiffin. The challenge is, you know, Ole Miss having a pretty good season, projected by me and a lot of other folks to make the playoffs. If that happens, if you're Florida, can you wait until late December, mid-January to get your coach? You know, obviously the interactions with Kiffin would determine if they would wait that long, because you don't want to wait that long and then Kiffin has cold feet or decides, you know what, I'm going to stay here, and then you're really in a mess. On the flip side, you look at what Alabama had to do, you know, replacing Saban last minute. They did okay. They got Kalen DeBoer, you know, from an established, you know, I thought one of the most underrated coaches in the country. So you can do that. But, yeah, I think Florida's going to go the power conference route. I think they, you know, they can't afford to take a chance on another up-and-comer. The thing that makes this whole thing messy is Florida has an interim president right now who I'm told is not that excited about getting rid of the football coach because he's the interim president. So whoever the new president is, will that person be on board in time to decide whether to make a move and who to make a move on? And then on top of that, you've got an athletic director, the one that hired Billy Napier, is there, and he's also the AD that hired and fired Dan Mullen. So do you want him to hire your next coach? So it's, you know, like most things, I live in Florida, like most things in Florida, it's a mess. But I think they go the power route and go for, I think Kiffin's 1A and 1B on their list. Can they get him? That's another story.
Well, he is Brett McMurphy from Action Network. Brett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Brett.
We appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
So there is Brett McMurphy on some college
football.
He says
your guy.
So the interesting part, and I'm stealing this take from somebody that does a podcast, Tyler Siski, about Ole Miss football and SEC football, but the transfer portal window opens in early December, and the first signing period is in early December for recruiting. The college football playoff starts December 12th.
Right.
Ole Miss is probably going to be in the playoff.
Yes.
If Ole Miss makes the playoff, and if Ole Miss is in the quarterfinals, they're going to be playing football until the end of December.
Right.
Lane Kiffin's not leaving Ole Miss before the college football playoff starts.
No.
So if you're Florida, are you going to hire a coach on December
that far into the portal?
28th, when the portal closes a week later, right, and it's been open for 3 weeks, and signing the first signing day, like you're the timing of everything makes it really hard to hire a coach in the college football playoff.
That's already in the playoff.
Now, if Ole Miss tanks out here and they don't make it and they're going to just a bowl game,
then that's
or something,
one thing.
Yeah, you're leaving for a bowl game. But yeah, I don't think that The timing of this is going to make it incredibly difficult for Florida to actually hire Lane Kiffin, assuming Ole Miss goes
to the playoff.
To the playoff. They might still do it, but it just would be a sort of nightmare scenario. And, like, if Ole Miss is in the semis, if they're in the championship game, portal's closed.
Right.
By the time Lane Kiffin's done coaching at Ole Miss. Right. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to go to Florida. The other aspect, and I don't know how much this matters, but Lane Kiffin has talked a lot about his kids. His daughter goes to Ole Miss, and he's talked a lot about, like, unprompted, how much he likes that his daughter goes to school there, and she loves being there, and, like, she wants him to stay there. Again, if Florida doubles his pay, I don't know if it'd
that's
be double.
That's another thing.
They're not going to double it. He makes a lot of money at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is, like, paying, like, a top 10 job right now, but he could still say no. But there's a lot of reasons I don't think he's leaving Ole Miss anytime soon, because they might win the national championship this year. They probably won't, but they're probably gonna be in the playoff.
Right.
Ole Miss has one of the probably 10 best odds to win the national title. You're not throwing that away because you need to go rebuild Florida in early December.
Because again, like you said, it's not what Barry Odom would get jumping to a P5.
Right. Like
I'm assuming Ole Miss can match salaries.
They can probably match
Florida.
There's a real chance that they might pay more than Florida.
Right.
Right. He might use it as some leverage to get more money, but they might be able to just say, yeah, we're better than Florida. Ole Miss has been better than Florida for the last three or four years now. All right. We got tickets to give away to go see Sarah Silverman. It's Sarah Silverman Postmortem Tour, Saturday, September 28th, The Pearl in the Palms, and we've got a pair of tickets for you. 702-364-1100. That is the phone number if you want to go see Sarah Silverman. Call in now at 702-364-1100. We're going to take caller number 4 at 702-364-1100. Caller 4 is going to see Sarah Silverman.
To Hayes. Hayes doesn't mind going to the cup. What a reverse move by Tip Hayes. Oh, my goodness. Dipsy do. What you going to do? Count that too. 74-67.
You're listening to the Press Box on 100.9 FM and 1100 AM.
Ed, is Becky Hammon about to make the biggest mistake of the season for the Aces?
Well, if Chicago somehow wins tonight and she rests all the players she says she's going to rest, she might be. I'd play for the 3 seed because I'd want to make sure I avoid New York in the semis. So now Chicago's probably not going to win. Will she know? Here's the other thing. She'll know. So
Aces play Dallas tonight at 7. Chicago and Connecticut play at 4.
4 o'clock, so she'll know what happened.
If Connecticut loses that game, the Aces just need to beat Dallas to get the 3 seed in the WNBA playoffs. If Connecticut wins, the Aces cannot catch them, and the Aces are
locked into the four. So it doesn't matter what they do against Dallas.
This is, and by the way, the Aces yesterday on their injury report listed Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, and Asia Wilson all as doubtful due to rest.
Right.
So it would appear as though they are not going to play in today's game. Mm-hmm. I think this is easy.
Well, maybe she's confident.
I think this is easy. Connecticut wins, you rest them. Connecticut loses, you're playing them.
Yeah.
I think this is super easy. And maybe that's what she's going to do, and she listed them as doubtful just
to do it.
To list them, and we'll see what happens. But I think it's an easy decision. If Chicago upsets Connecticut tomorrow, and by quick side note, Chicago's playing for their playoff lives. Tonight. They have to win to have any shot at the playoff. Chicago can win and still not make it because they lose some tiebreakers there. It's Atlanta, Chicago, and Washington, right, Danny? Yeah, those three teams are all still in the mix for the final spot in the postseason. So Chicago's playing for a playoff spot. They are going to be motivated to win the game. They're not very good, so that might not matter, but they are going to be motivated to win. If you're Becky Hammon and Connecticut loses, I don't know how you can rest them.
No, you want to get to the 3 seed.
I don't know how you could legitimately say we're resting and we're okay with the 4.
Yeah.
I don't get it whatsoever. So this should be an easy decision. You get to see the result, and it'll be over an hour before your game starts.
Yeah, you'll know exactly what happened.
It's not even like, oh, it's going to end when our game starts, it'll be ending. No, you're going to know an hour before. So you can absolutely make that decision on whether or not they're going to play before your game starts.
Right.
And even if you wanted to still play them for a quarter just because, that's
fine
too.
Maybe she's so confident in her team that she doesn't think the 3 and the 4 matter.
And that's why I think she might be making a huge mistake. Because I don't think in the first round it matters so much. I think they're beating Seattle or Indiana.
Who you're playing in the second round.
No matter what. It's do you get New York in round two or do you get Minnesota?
Minnesota in round two.
And I would much rather have Minnesota. Because here's, for the Aces' potential path, I feel very confident with their first round matchup, they're going to win. It's either going to be Seattle or Indiana. I think they're winning either one of those series. I also feel confident they're not beating New York in a series. I think New York is going to beat the Aces in a five-game series in the playoffs. Minnesota would be more of a toss-up. I might lean Aces depending on how they look in that first-round series, but that would be a bit of a toss-up one. And maybe Becky Hammon's so confident that she says it doesn't matter.
Well, if she rests them all and Connecticut loses, that's the answer.
Yeah.
That she just doesn't think 3 and 4 make a big difference, and she's confident in her team, that they've been playing really well, and in her mind, they're the best team, they have the best player, and they'll beat whoever's in front of them.
And I think that would be a massive mistake to just assume we'll beat New York in the second round.
Right.
I think that'd be a bad mistake at the end of the day. The funniest possible outcome, by the way, Chicago wins and upsets Connecticut. Becky Hammon rests her starters, and they still beat Dallas. Because Dallas is not very good and has nothing to play for.
It's true.
So there's a chance that Sydney Colson, Kate Martin, and whoever else, Meg Gustafson, they just go off and just beat Dallas anyways, and they get the 3 seed.
Yeah, they get the 3 seed, and they're all resting.
That's the funniest outcome to me, because I'm sitting here being like, oh, what a terrible decision from Becky Hammon. And then, oh, it doesn't matter because Kate Martin just dominated Dallas in that game. So they could win without their starters. But I'm playing them if I have any chance at the 3 seed. They're in such a great spot where you get to see the other game.
Right.
And
you know what's happening.
Right. You get to see it and understand, whereas Connecticut has to play their starters, assuming they want the 3 seed. They have to play and go for a win, like everything they can to win the game. And the Aces are in a great position to sit back and watch and then understand what they need or possibly can't do.
Right.
To get a 3 seed, and Becky Hammon might ignore that entirely.
I'm with you on that. I think you avoid New York as long as possible.
And I just want to see them play the Fever in the first round, too.
Well, yeah, because of Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, absolute best possible matchup for entertainment value that we could get. So please get the 3 seed tonight, Aces, and
play 3-6.
Yeah, give us Aces Fever in the first round. It'll be great.
Do you, by any chance, know who would have a tiebreaker for Fever and Mercury? Because they're only separated by a game.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Indy's locked into the 6.
So then they have tiebreaker.
I saw multiple tweets yesterday that said they're locked into the 6. So, yeah, they must have the tiebreaker there. They're locked in. The 8 seed, by the way, Atlanta's probably going to get it, but there's some wild three-way tiebreakers that will decide that if they all finish tied.